There are five regional playwrights who are checking their scripts. If they are directing their plays, then they're rehearsing and tweaking right now and getting the opportunity to hear their words brought to life. And to grow as we realize playwrights need to experience what they've written coming off the page. These writers have Willis Carrier to thank this time around, going all the way back to 1925. Roaming around the internet, we discover the invention and widespread adoption of air conditioning had a profound impact on many aspects of modern life as we know, but few as dramatic as spaces that were transformed, like theaters. From the golden age of cinema to contemporary multiplexes, air conditioning reshaped the way audiences would engage with entertainment and revolutionized both the business model and the cultural significance of theaters. Before air conditioning, theaters were often stiflingly hot during the summer months. Grand movie palaces with their ornate architecture and dense crowds became uncomfortable spaces once temperatures rose. As a result, attendance would drop significantly during warmer seasons, and studios tended to avoid releasing major films in the summer. The experience of watching a movie or live performance was frequently marred by physical discomfort, limiting the appeal of theaters to only the most dedicated patrons. This changed dramatically in 1925, when Willis Carrier installed the first modern air conditioning system in the Rivoli Theater in Times Square. The innovation was a revelation. Suddenly, theaters became not only places of entertainment, but also sanctuaries from the oppressive summer heat. Comfortable, climate-controlled environments drew in crowds who might otherwise have stayed home. The introduction of air conditioning also had ripple effects on the film industry itself. With theaters now able to maintain pleasant temperatures, well, studios would begin to release major films during the summer, a season previously considered commercially risky. This gave rise to the concept of the summer blockbuster. It fundamentally altered, in fact, the calendar of film releases and the economics of Hollywood. That we learn from in and around the internet. But what does that all have to do with Bridget Giambi, William Jeffrey, Claire Joelle, Roderick Markham, David Parmalee, all of them being able to showcase their plays in Wilkes-Barre in 2025? Well, here we go. The Little Theater of Wilkes-Barre will present its annual weekend of one acts, August 8th through the 10th, with five pieces by these five regional playwrights. Three of those writers stopped in at the WVIA Benko studio to talk about their new work. David Parmalee, general manager of the Little Theater, with William Jeffrey and Roderick Markham. David explains the Carrier connection.
It's a story that involves artistic direction of the theater, the youth programs we do, and air conditioning. Since 1986, we've done a youth workshop for local kids 5 to 17. And we didn't have air conditioning when we started it. We didn't have it till 2018, as a matter of fact. So those kids are pretty tough. But we've never charged a dime for it, and we get enthusiastic kids who often go on to do some great things in theater. This year, I think we had 72 young people. But in 2018, thanks to the efforts of Walter Mitchell and the local governments and generous people, we were able to install modern HVAC system. And Scott Collin, our artistic director, still is, said, let's see what we can do with the summer season. We now have a little extra time, and what can we put in there? And in 2019, we premiered our first Festival of One Acts. And there's a couple rules to it. One is, it's always one weekend. You get three opportunities to see it. They are local authors, and they're works that have not been performed before. So you're seeing what I like to call farm-to-table theater. You know, they're written locally, they're directed locally, local casts, We have a constricted stage for it. We only go so deep on the stage so that people don't have to build a full set. The set is the least of our worries. You know, what we want is to give people an opportunity to see what's happening in the creative world here of the stage and playwriting in particular. We took some time off for COVID, and we resumed, let's see, 3 years ago now. We think about BC now, right? Before COVID. This is our third one-act festival since we reopened. And I think it's going to be tremendously special. We were so surprised at the amount of response by authors. We got, I think, four times the number of scripts we got in previous years. So word's getting around, and bravo to Scott. The idea is broadening every year we do it.
You get a good showing of actors who want to be part of something original, too.
Yes, there's a lot of team spirit to this. A lot of playwrights like to direct their own plays, not always. So they'll ask somebody whose work they're familiar with, would you take that on? Would you go to the helm of it? And we don't necessarily go through the formal audition process that we do always for our main stage productions. People will, hey, you want to? Would you like to be part of this? And it's less of a, what's the right word? A less demanding production. They tend to be shorter, so the rehearsal period is less. We're not building scenery and complex costumes, etc. So it's kind of like a pickup game of baseball, and it's fun to watch them come together. There's great friendliness. And then during Tech Week, which is coming up, during the final week before production, finally, all five teams are going to get together for the first time and see them in a row, which hasn't happened. We've all been rehearsing separately. I did a few on my patio. So as long as it doesn't rain, it works.
Introduce us to those who will be part and a little bit about them.
On my left, for those of you at home, we have Roderick Markham, and to his left, William Jeffrey. Both have done a tremendous amount of writing. Roderick primarily for the stage, and Bill, I think more than for the stage for film, but this is the third year that you've been part of the One Act Festival.
Who are the other playwrights?
We've got Claire Joelle. This is her second year, and she was actually recognized when she took her production with its cast to Maryland last year to the Eastern States Theater Association Festival. Came home with Excellence in Acting, Best Production. I mean, got some very, very nice awards there. So she's back this year, of course, being tremendously encouraged. And a new playwright to us who has spent endless hours on our set crew building for us, and we love her for that, Bridget Jimby, who actually took a short story she wrote some years ago that she used to tell friends around the campfire, and it's almost has a fairy tale sort of quality to it, and adapted that for the stage. Now, having been part of our theater family, she said, aha, I'll turn it into a play. So there's our five playwrights for this year.
Welcome to you, Bill and Rick. You two know each other.
Well, we were fortunate enough, Rick and I, we had two short plays produced at Diva Theater, and that's where we met. And I had contacted Rick earlier. I had written a play that I didn't have a home for, and so I went to the Legion Theater, and he never got back to me.
What I told him was that I absolutely loved his play, but he was looking for someone to produce it. He was making the assumption that we had any money, which we did not. But I said, if we ever were to come upon any, I would love to produce his work.
Yes, that's true. When he finally saw me face to face, he had to own up that he had received my play and then give me the spiel that he loved it. But, you know, we worked it out. And then I find out that he's also a part of Little Theater's one act and that we're going to be seeing each other here.
It was very exciting that we were both selected this year because there was a lot of entries and we had absolutely no idea. I did not know until I got the email and I was like, wow.
I assumed I wasn't chosen and so nobody wanted to tell me until I finally got the acceptance letter. That was great.
We always want to protect the surprise factor, but tell us the name and what you've created for us.
My play this year, it's called Tilly's Last Waltz, and it's partially based on my relationship with my mother when she was in hospice care. And so it's a son who is given the last opportunity to say his goodbyes.
Two actors?
Nope, this is the biggest cast I've had, is four actors are in mine, and they're fantastic. This is because it's a story about a young man who's... His mother is comatose, and she has a while left to live, but he is given the opportunity with the new medical clinical trial to rouse her, to be able to talk to her and say goodbye. Unfortunately, if he does that, she only has 10 minutes of life. So he has to make that choice. And then once the choice is given, if given that opportunity to say goodbye, what would you even say? It's an unfortunate, I thought, universal idea that most people have to go through sometimes. And I just wanted to present it in a way that was more of a fantasy version of it to make people think and the choices that they're given and what they might do if given that opportunity and placed in that circumstance.
Is there any humor?
Yes, yes. I always pepper humor in there. I always think that humor is the great, it tears down walls. It gives an audience a camaraderie with the cast and it makes them just care more about what happens to them. And it increases the likability of characters. And I look through life through the prism of humor anyway. So I tried to present that as part of just an average everyday life is there, no matter how bad things might get and the tragedies that are inevitable to all of us. There's always humor to be had. And I think that's a universal theme of people that they cling to it when they can, when they have nothing else.
And Rick, we've had a chance to talk to you before. You have been involved in some very spooky activity along Route 315 benefit work, keeping the haunted mansion. What's it called?
Gravestone Manor Theatrical Haunted House.
And you've served behind the scenes. You weren't a ghoul, were you?
Oh, I perform. I still dabble in performing there. Yeah, I was one of the founding members of that. I was involved in producing it for, I believe, 19 years. And then since my retirement from that, which is, golly, I don't even know right now, I'm going to say it's been 7 years maybe, the production was taken over by my partner, Robert Patton, who is ace director and had directed it from the beginning anyway. And he is doing an absolutely wonderful, wonderful, wonderful job. And for years, I relished in the fact of it would be surprising to me. I would do absolutely nothing except buy a ticket. And I loved the show so much that a few years ago, I auditioned for one. And now this year, I'm going to be building sets and things like that in the summer. I'm very happy not to have any part of managing it anymore because that was just, it was basically a full-time job. So bless Rob's heart for doing that. But I am finding myself increasingly involved in it because I missed it so much.
And we just add that Greystone Manor is a benefit for United Way of the Wyoming Valley. But you also are not just a tech guy, you're a producer, and you are a playwright. What have you brought to life for this go-round of the one acts?
Okay, so my show is called How Dark Are Your Secrets? It is a dark comedy that is loosely inspired by the wonderful Frank Capra film, It's a Wonderful Life. And I was telling David on the way in here that he's actually responsible for How Dark Are Your Secrets existing. Because last fall, Little Theater was doing a production of It's a Wonderful Life, a radio production, and David asked if I would help him construct the set, which I did, and we had a blast. And I was sitting in the audience watching, you know, this heartwarming story from the 1940s, and I couldn't help thinking, like, what would happen if this happened in today's modern cynical world? You know, would anybody believe in the angel? Would their motives be questioned, kind of thing? So the earlier play that we talked about that I had produced by Diva in January was a romantic comedy, Match 365. And that took me about 2 weeks to write. How Dark Are Your Secrets is the same length, roughly, and it took me 4 months to write. And the reason it took so long, it was really fun to write, but I hope the audience will appreciate this, is I wanted to construct a play where the ending would be completely surprising the first time that you see it. But if you then watched it a second time, you would realize that almost every single line had a hidden meaning once you knew the ending, and the ending would be inevitable. And it's hard to write like that. But that's what I tried to do. So essentially the setup for How Dark Are Your Secrets is we have a guy drinking at a bar in modern day, and he is not the nicest person on earth. He has lived a life that it's not, he's not Jimmy Stewart. He's caused some pain. He's caused some problems along the way for various people. And a woman, a mysterious woman, sort of magically appears next to him at the bar. And she seems to know more about his life than she reasonably could. So he, having a cultural context of It's a Wonderful Life and that Meg Ryan film, City of Angels from 1998, that sort of thing, he forms the conclusion that she must be his guardian angel. But is there really enough evidence to conclude that? So really the show from that point on, it's a game between the cast at this bar and the audience to try to figure out what she really is and what's really going on. And in order to make the surprise ending surprising, I had to come up with a couple different twist endings that are revealed along the way when he'll say, aha, it's this, so that the audience would then go, you know, some members would be like, I knew it. And then they, no, you didn't, because the play is continuing and it's something else. And actually, in this particular instance, the final twist is not revealed until the very last word of the play before the blackout. So hopefully, you know, that's something people will dig. You need to have a bit of an attention span, which is in short supply these days. I'll tell you, Erica, one thing that inspired this style of writing, I'm a huge, huge fan of novels from the golden age of mystery fiction. That's kind of up for grabs, but in my opinion, with no insult to Sherlock Holmes, who I dearly love, and this gentleman has actually written a full-length play based on a Sherlock Holmes novel, I would say the golden age of mystery fiction was from the 1920s, probably until the 1950s. And there was a club of very popular writers in England, which is probably about to become more well-known, because I heard they're doing a mini-series for it for TV, which is the Detection Club, from like the 1930s to the 50s. And it was people like a lot of writers I really admire, Dorothy Sayers, Lord Peter Wimsey, G.K. Chesterton, Pennsylvania's own golden age mystery writer, the incredibly unique John Dixon Carr was a member of that society as well. But they came up with a Bible. It's almost like a religion to them. And they came up with this Bible of rules for writing mystery fiction that I tried to adhere to. And that is that your ending should be surprising, but it must be fair. You know, all the clues have to be there so that the astute reader could potentially have figured it out. And in striking that balance is why it took 4 months to write How Dark Are Your Secrets.
I am a little worried because I agree with that thought about attention spans, because I zoned out halfway through that.
Thanks, buddy. This is why we work so well together.
Oh, next it's stand up for you two. David, tell us about your entry.
I am very blessed in having my work produced, and I read about the task of being a playwright and how difficult it is to find a stage for your work. After all, most theaters need to attract an audience, and original material is not the most surefire and best way to do that. People like to buy the pizza that they like. The new pizza place is not necessarily going to get a try. So it's been just a gift for me to be able to find a stage for my work. And I wrote a trilogy during COVID, and we actually read it on Zoom in April or May of 2020. And it was three plays about businesses failing, very different kinds of businesses. And the trilogy is called Come Back Soon. One was an inn run by a woman who was born in a home she died in at age 90 and ran that inn for all those years. Another was about a diner being gentrified out of existence. And the third one is very different. Scott and Walter Mitchell have taken charge of getting the scripts selected for these one-act weekends. And they have a novel way of doing it. Walter, as you know, is very active in the Pennsylvania Theater Associations and the regional theater associations. He's been president of it, and he knows those folks very well. So we send the scripts blind to people in various parts of Pennsylvania who are part of PACT, the Association of Community Theaters in Pennsylvania. So it's almost like a wine tasting where you take off the labels. They read the scripts, and they give us a recommendation of which scripts should be produced. This year, we had so many, it actually took a lot longer to get them read. And of course, we take it from there and put together a quilt, so to speak, of enough shows so that we have something for everybody, we hope, and that it fits within the time constraints. It's an evening of theater, not a full day where the audience is expected to stay there for a great length of time. So we keep it compact. And I've been fortunate enough, I've run that gauntlet three times, and all three of those plays have made it. So I'm very, very grateful to see that come to fruition. And there was one slate where three of the five were about death, I think, and in no relation to one another. We didn't say, okay, this year's theme is death, but this year there's a lot more humor in the work. And mine was drawn from my experience appearing on PA Live at WBRE. And of course, as theater people, we love to go there and talk about what's coming up. And we like to hope we have some entertaining content to offer there. And they're so good at what they do. As they're going along, there's a live audience and a camera, and as theater actors who rehearse everything, we're very intimidated by that. And of course, they ask us, how do you memorize all those lines? They're intimidated a little bit by what we do, and have been a guest there many times. So this play, called Going Out of Business, is about a local factory. No big deal. It's a factory. In fact, they make extension cords. but it has recently gone out of business for a very tragic reason. And a sizable amount of money has been left behind by the owner for people who can come on this local lifestyle TV show. This one's in the morning. Sunrise Great Bend 2000. It's set in the year 2000. And describe what their time in the employ of this factory meant to them and how they would use the money. So we meet five people who have come on to do that, ranging in age from very young to 89 years old, and why they need the money. And the audience gets to decide at the end who gets it. And every one of them, with the exception of maybe one, has a different need that pulls at the heartstrings. And in the end, what it's about is the value of meaningful work and what something that might be considered the workaday world can contribute, not just to the community where it's located, but also to people's lives, because they get to come on, look back on it, and say, this is what it meant to me. This is what it made possible. So that's my theme for all three, and I'm just delighted we can see it. So the audience can come and actually fill out a card, which we will collect, and see who they vote for, who pulled at your heartstrings. And I can't wait. I have no idea.
Another surprise then will be when you each get to see the other plays for the first time.
Yes. Oh, I can't wait to see them.
Yeah.
I actually read Bridget's and I said, you've got something very unique here and sort of spooky. Spooky in the sort of Brothers Grimm sense. It's short, but it's different. So I want to see how people react to that. And Claire has a great interest, demonstrated by the show that did so well last year, in how people, in their attitude towards their own mental health and mental health issues, and how they talk about that. And I was talking with her about the play, and she came up with one of those sentences that lives in your mind. She said, it's about becoming comfortable with the uncomfortable. And I said, well, how would you describe your play? She said, well, it's a comedy until it isn't. I said, wow, I want to see it already.
And David, you told us it's a limited engagement.
We're going to do this Friday, August the 8th at 8, as we normally do. Saturday night, August the 9th at 8 o'clock. And then a Sunday matinee, which have become very popular. People love matinees at 3 o'clock on Sunday. We are blessed with a traditional theater of great size, 35-foot proscenium arch, 35 feet, my gosh, and enough room to accommodate anybody. It's the largest community theater in the area by far. But for the one acts, we make it very informal. No need for a reservation, tickets at the door, walk in, choose your seat, and just settle in and relax and look at the smorgasbord of plays in front of you. We've got three parking lots. We have excellent handicapped access. It couldn't be easier. And we're ready to welcome you. We can't wait to hear what you think of the works.
David Parmalee, general manager of the Little Theater of Wilkes-Barre, and he was here at the Benko Studio with playwrights William Jeffrey and Roderick Markham, three of the five playwrights who will be featured in the weekend of one acts at the theater, August 8th, 9th, and 10th, Friday and Saturday nights at 8, Sunday matinee at 3. The Little Theater of Wilkes-Barre, located on North Main Street, and that's in Wilkes-Barre, of course. For more information on the web, ltwb.org. The annual weekend of one acts, August 8th through the 10th, at the Little Theater of Wilkes-Barre, North Main Street, and Friday and Saturday performances at 8, Sunday matinee at 3. It's ltwb.org, ltwb.org.